Welcome to episode 238 of the Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. It is Sunday, September 23rd, 2012. I am the Solomonster. Got a couple of things to get to this week, including thoughts on Night of Champions from last Sunday, the big pay-per-view, Raw, Impact, SmackDown for a change, and I've got something to say about the WWE Divas as well. That's coming up a little bit later on, plus a whole boatload of questions and shout-outs, so we'll get to all that good stuff. We'll start off with the Night of Champions pay-per-view from last Sunday. WWE putting on a pretty ho-hum show, I thought. An excellent main event, though, did cap off the show between John Cena and CM Punk. Cena and Punk have great chemistry together, no doubt about it. They rarely have a bad match. Took a lot of balls, I thought, on WWE's part to end the pay-per-view with a draw the way that they did, but yeah, they were kind of stuck. On the one hand, it would have been wrong to take the title off CM Punk, which I was very happy they did not do. But on the other hand, they need to keep the feud going with John Cena, at least for another pay-per-view. So you don't want to beat the man decisively. And we ended up with a finish that we got last Sunday. So let's just run through these matches really quickly. I saved my predictions for a special edition of SE Scoops Live. Myself and Noah Mark hosted an hour before the pay-per-view went on the air. I know that upset some of you, and so don't worry, it's not going to be a regular occurrence, but I am pleased to report that I did go 5-1 in my predictions. Randy Orton may have given the crowd in Boston the middle finger, but he also gave me the middle finger since I had Dolph Ziggler winning, so I was wrong on that. That was the only match I got wrong. I did predict Layla over Caitlyn to retain the Divas Championship, but then they went and changed the match to Layla against Eve, so I'm not counting that. Of course, that had been the original plan before Eve accidentally eliminated herself from that Battle Royal on Raw all those weeks ago. It was supposed to be her and Layla for the title and ended up being Caitlyn almost by accident, really. I picked Layla because Caitlyn is no good, and they must have realized that too since they did an angle on this pay-per-view where someone attacked Caitlyn backstage and injured her ankle, so Eve ended up taking her spot. So we'll get to that match shortly. JBL returned and joined Michael Cole on commentary for the show in place of Jerry Lawler, who has returned home to Memphis. He continues to convalesce after his heart attack. Lawler will actually be on Raw this Monday night, not in the arena in the flesh, but he will be via satellite from his home, his palace in Memphis, Tennessee, giving, I guess, technically his first interview, but not really. Lawler actually had a press conference from his home. How many people can say they have press conferences from their home? And he was sitting in his, what looked like a throne, almost. So Jerry Lawler, still very much a revered figure in Memphis, but he had this 15-minute long press conference that you can watch. It's online, it's on the internet for those of you who haven't seen it. He looked and sounded great. His voice was a little raspy, obviously, as he said, because he had tubes running down his throat for so long. So he may not sound perfect for a while, but otherwise he looked fine. And considering the kind of heart attack that he had, and again, the whole situation backstage that night, having to revive him and everything, and apparently there were people crying in the locker room when they saw that. It's been, you know, I don't want to call it a miracle, but in some ways it's been a miraculous turnaround from where he was just a few weeks ago. So that's really cool to see. And we'll see the King back on Raw this Monday for a special interview. I guess Michael Cole will be conducting that interview. And in the meantime, we had JBL back in the King's place. And when I did my commentary on Sound Off 234 about how Jerry Lawler needs to step away from the announce booth, the first option I listed as a potential replacement, ironically enough, was JBL. So I was very happy to see him back, albeit not under these circumstances. He and Cole played off each other very well, as I figured they would. I mean, they've worked together before. And Bradshaw was just, he was something else on this show with all of his historical wrestling facts that he brought to the broadcast. He must have been driving Vince McMahon absolutely nuts backstage. I could just picture Vince pulling out what's left of his hair And we had a battle royal for the United States Championship shot pre-show. It was to determine who would face Antonio Cesaro on the main show. I ended up doing a bit of live commentary unexpectedly for this battle royal during SE Scoops Live, which was fun. For those of you who want to go back and check it out, it is in the archives. It came down to Zack Ryder, Tenzai, and the primetime players. That pretty much telegraphed who was winning because they weren't about to put Cesaro in there with another heel. And sure enough, Ryder eliminated Tenzai to pick up the win. So Zack Ryder gets the title shot. We had The Miz, Sin Cara, Rey Mysterio, and Cody Rhodes for the Intercontinental Championship four-way to open the pay-per-view. On commentary, JBL talked about how both Mysterio and Sin Cara were both former AAA champions down in Mexico, which is factually incorrect. Just felt the need to point that out. Not only was neither man a world champion in AAA, I don't believe Sin Cara, or Mystico as he used to be known, was ever in AAA. He was a CMLL guy. But bless JBL for trying. At least we had an announcer attempting to give us a wrestling history lesson for a change instead of telling us who was trending on Twitter. Miz pinned Cody Rhodes with the skull-crushing finale to retain the title, even though JBL kept telling us that Miz had just won the title, apparently not realizing that he was already the champion. Kofi Kingston and R-Truth defending the tag team titles against Kane and Daniel Bryan. Team Friendship. Although I guess that's not their official name. I still like my Dragon Machine name better. Although there were two other names floated on SE Scoops Live that I liked even more. Red Dragon was one. Again, focusing on the Dragon part, I understand he hasn't used the American Dragon nickname since he came to WWE, but still, I thought Red Dragon was actually a better option. Also, I thought it was pretty clever. Someone suggested Hell No as a tag team name, which might be my favorite, so... You know, the challengers, they squabbled, they argued, then they hugged. Place went nuts for it. Kane was on the top rope, and Bryan shoved him off, but he landed on poor Kofi Kingston and ended up pinning him. So we have new tag team champions, and after the match, they shouted, "I am the tag team champions," at one another in hilarious fashion. And Kane, in particular, was very entertaining here. I'm starting to dig this storyline. I really am. I am entertained immensely by it. And while I would prefer, you know, at times before they've used Kane in a comedy role, and it kind of annoyed me because I always felt that the Kane character should be respected as this kind of monster that just goes around beating the shit out of people. But, you know, I've come to understand with Kane that, you know, he's been around for so long. He's gone from face to heel to face, and he's gone out of monster mode to comedy mode to mid-card mode so many different times. You know, he'll be a monster again at some point. In the meantime, it's very entertaining. He's actually, he's very good in this role. And Antonio Cesaro defended the United States Championship against Zack Ryder. All you need to know about this match is that Cesaro nailed Ryder with an absolutely brutal European uppercut. I mean, he propelled him into the air and just nailed him with this uppercut. It was sick. He won with his move in the end. I think he calls it the neutralizer. He's got to change that move. I'm sorry. There's nothing devastating about that move at all. Actually, I think the match, quite frankly, should have ended after the uppercut. But anyway, he wins and retains the title. Randy Orton and Dolph Ziggler. It was a year ago on the show, although at the time, I don't know if it was Night of Champions or if it had a different name, but a year ago, Randy Orton put over Mark Henry for the World Heavyweight Championship. Dolph Ziggler would not get the same treatment on this night. They had a match that, by the end, was good, but I gotta be honest with you, this match was boring. It was. It was actually very disappointing to me. It dragged a lot. There were a lot of long rest holds. I mean, you know, that may be expected with a Randy Orton match, but, you know, it was Ziggler working a headlock for, like, 6 minutes straight. Or it felt like 6 minutes straight. And these guys are better than that. So, disappointing match until the end. It picked up a little bit. Ziggler ate an RKO for the finish. Crowd was really into Dolph. And Randy Orton let the fans know how he felt about that by flipping them off so subtly before dropping down for the RKO. Apparently, when the match was over, Orton got into a pretty vulgar shouting match with a fan at ringside. He challenged him to meet him outside after the show so he could kick his ass. No word on if said fan actually showed up, but I presume not, or we would have heard about it by now. Layla defending the Divas Championship against Eve Torres, replacing the injured Caitlyn. They had a better match than Layla would have had with Caitlyn, I'll tell you that much. Eve won the title with a neck breaker. I clocked the Divas stopwatch in at 6.5 minutes, which is about average for a pay-per-view. Best part of all this was when, I think it was Eve, had Layla in a body scissors. And JBL is talking about how Kevin Von Erich, of the famous Von Erich family, popularized that move back in the day. And he asked Michael Cole if he even knows who that is. And Cole says, of course I do. It's the Texas Tornado. And JBL had to school him like a child, tell him that it was actually Kerry Von Erich who was the Texas Tornado, not Kevin Von Erich. I thought that was amusing. Backstage, more screaming from Kane and Bryan. They were met by Dr. Shelby and AJ. And Kane disappeared. He came back pouring Gatorade all over them, saying he was going to Disneyland. Kane is awesome. World champion Sheamus defending against Alberto Del Rio for the 16th time, I believe, in the last... he's defending for the 16th time in the last four pay-per-views against Del Rio. Booker T came out before the match. He announced that upon further investigation, he was lifting the ban on the brogue kick. Well, that didn't take very long. What was the point of banning it in the first place if you were just going to bring it back right away? On commentary, JBL absolutely buried Mil Máscaras, who was, of course, a WWE Hall of Famer. He went into the Hall of Fame this year in Miami, actually. I was there for that ceremony. Mil Máscaras was probably the worst of the bunch to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Not in terms of him deserving to go in, just in terms of the speeches. And I admit part of that may have been the fact that I didn't understand most of what he was saying, but he just was rambling on and not one of the better Hall of Fame speeches. But JBL absolutely killed this guy on commentary. And Mil Máscaras is one of the most popular stars in the history of Lucha Libre. And the uncle of Alberto Del Rio. And Bradshaw just talked about what a selfish person Máscaras is, and he called him the most egomaniacal human that ever lived. I mean, that's... wow. The most egomaniacal human that ever lived. And he said how fortunate Alberto Del Rio was to have not inherited those same characteristics. Just absolutely buried the dude, and rightfully so. This is the same Mil Máscaras who eliminated himself from the Royal Rumble match in 1997 because he wouldn't let anyone else do it. I remember Chris Jericho in his first book, A Lion's Tale, talking about what a huge ego Máscaras had. I think Bradshaw may have worked with him at some point down in Mexico. That probably would have been in the early to mid-90s. Long time ago. But anyway, everything he said here was a shoot. But makes me wonder how Del Rio must have felt about that. So the match ended like all their other matches have ended. Bro kick, 1-2-3. It was actually a good match, but I am so over Sheamus versus Del Rio at this point. They just, they work fine together. It's not their fault. It's just, this is not an attractive pairing. It's not like these two guys go in the ring every single time and they have an amazing, unbelievable, four-star match. They don't. They go in there, they have a match. And probably the fact that every single match ends the exact same way without fail doesn't help. There's no reason to ever see these two have a match again. And I was begging for Dolph Ziggler to run out and cash in his money in the bank when the match was over. Sheamus was selling that his arm might be injured. He had been locked in the cross arm breaker for a while by Del Rio and was still kind of nursing the arm. Sadly, Ziggler never did come out. And after a while, Sheamus just kind of shook it off and he was fine. But like I said, I don't need to see Sheamus and Del Rio again, which begs the question, of course. If not, then, what do you do with Sheamus? Who does he move on to next as far as an opponent? Now, Randy Orton beat Dolph Ziggler on the show, and Randy Orton is certainly one of the top stars. Actually, he probably is the top star behind Sheamus on SmackDown. It would make sense for Randy Orton to be next in line for a world title shot. I don't know if that's the case. I don't think they've really pushed anything in that direction. And quite frankly, Sheamus and Orton, two big baby faces against one another for the championship, that's a match I would rather save for a bigger show. I mean, Survivor Series is not as big as it used to be. I would rather save a match like that for a Survivor Series or a Royal Rumble or something like that. Big Show is back or coming back. I think he wrestled CM Punk on the house shows this weekend. There's been some rumor that Big Show will be back, perhaps as Sheamus' next opponent for the World Championship, maybe as a stopgap between this and maybe Randy Orton. You know, I guess that's fine. You know, you could do Sheamus and Big Show. My question is this. Here's a suggestion for WWE. What about Mark Henry? We have not seen Mark Henry on television for months. Because I think he had shoulder surgery. He was nursing, actually, a couple of different injuries. I think a knee injury as well. He's now been out for a number of months. It was shortly after WrestleMania, I think, when he disappeared. And as far as I know, he should be ready to come back shortly, if not now. I actually haven't gotten a recent update on Mark Henry. I know he was progressing in his rehab, but if Mark Henry is ready to go and they're just kind of waiting, if they're saving him for something, wait no more. I think Mark Henry and Sheamus would make sense. It would put Mark Henry back in the world title picture. He was doing so well in that role late last year into the beginning part of this year before they just completely... You know, they took the title off him, and then they just kind of pushed him back down to the mid-card. And I think Mark Henry, you know, he excelled in that role when he was defending the championship and challenging for the championship. He had his whole Hall of Pain gimmick. The Hall of Pain, you know, was initiated a year ago, like I said, when he beat Randy Orton for the title. And if Mark Henry is ready to come back, then bring him back. I'd like to see Sheamus and Mark Henry go in there and beat the crap out of each other. Anybody but Del Rio, because that feud is just completely played out at this point. So, after that, we had the main event, CM Punk, John Cena, for the WWE Championship. Cena came out wearing his new pink and black colors for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I already talked about the idiots criticizing him for this last week. There was at least one person who argued on SEScoops.com, I should say on the SEScoops Facebook page as well, who argued that their hate wasn't so much for Cena wearing pink or pandering to the audience, but they took issue with WWE partnering with the Susan G. Komen Foundation, which has been exposed in the past for not using the money they raise for exactly the things that most people might think it's being really used for. And that's a valid criticism. That is a valid criticism, and Susan G. Komen is not the only charitable organization that does that sort of thing. Kind of reminds me of Lance Armstrong's Live Strong. There was a great article. I just read the article recently. I forgot what the website was. There was a whole article about Lance Armstrong and Live Strong. And, you know, Lance Armstrong has done some really great stuff as far as bringing awareness to cancer. You see the Live Strong bracelets, and that's all well and good. But, again, some people might think the money that they raise goes towards research, and it really doesn't. So in that respect, you know, Komen is not the only charitable foundation that misleads people in some ways, and some of them are outright involved in fraudulent activities. I'm not saying Komen is necessarily one of them, but again, valid criticism. Absolutely valid criticism. But there were an awful lot of people who were ragging on John Cena for other more superficial reasons. You know, I rag on the guy sometimes for bad comedy, for crappy promos, his inability to run down to the ring, but to bash him for this, come on. I mean, really. Anyway, this was a great match. Not quite as great as their Money in the Bank match from last year. Still excellent. One of our listeners, Matt, believes it's an easy contender, he says, for match of the year. Either that one, he says, or Bryan and Sheamus, 2 out of 3 falls from Extreme Rules. I wouldn't go that far on Punk and Cena. Again, I thought they had a pretty good match, pretty great match, actually, on this pay-per-view. But I would rank Bryan, Sheamus, Cena, and Lesnar from the same show, or even Punk versus Bryan at Over the Limit as match of the year contenders in WWE before I would say the same thing about this match. They kicked out of each other's finisher a million times, which I'm not a huge fan of, but the fans were into it. Punk used a rock bottom on John Cena for a 2 count, hopefully foreshadowing what will be our Royal Rumble main event, which poses an interesting question, actually. If you have Rock versus Punk for the title at the Royal Rumble, do you put that on last or do you end with the Rumble match itself? Ordinarily, I'd say the Rumble match, but I don't see how you could end with anything other than Rock versus Punk, especially if Rock is going to win the title. But I know others may feel differently about that. We've had debates about this before, you know, when in years where the Rumble has not headlined the show, although I think the last time they ended with a title match and not the Rumble was actually back in 2006, and that was a god-awful main event with Kurt Angle and Mark Henry. Cena actually busted out a tope during this match, and Paul Heyman's reaction at ringside was priceless. This is a man who witnessed so many bloody battles in ECW with guys tearing each other's flesh with barbed wire. Yet, judging by his expression, you would think this tope by John Cena was the most shocking thing Paul Heyman had ever seen. And Cena actually rolled his ankle early on in the match. It may have been on this spot, I don't know. After the show, he took a picture of it and it had swelled badly. It looked pretty gross. And then we found out after Raw on Monday that John Cena had undergone surgery to remove bone spurs from his elbow. So the dude is pretty banged up. He's going to be out of action possibly as long as 6 weeks, which could spell trouble for his chances of being ready for Hell in a Cell against Punk, although I think he'll be there. I just can't see him missing that show. Cena is not going to be missing any TV because of the injury. In fact, he's already announced that he will be on Raw this Monday. So for all those people jumping with joy that John Cena got hurt and will be off TV, prepare to be disappointed. Never ceases to amaze me how classless people can be, you know, celebrating someone getting injured. I understand their point of view. It's not that they're necessarily celebrating that the guy is hurt, but, you know, rather that, you know, the guy's banged up and he can use some time off. His character could use the time away from TV to freshen up and let other people in the main event picture. I get that, but there's a better way to say that than posting tweets, as one person did, saying, yes, 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 you know, John Cena out 4 to 6 weeks after elbow surgery. Really? Yes, yes, yes. I'm all for letting someone else share in the spotlight and not having John Cena hog up every main event, but I don't wish ill on the man. Not only that, but you know what? Here's what I don't understand about all the hate that I see from some people about Punk and Cena. You know, Cena and Punk consistently have great matches together. I'm fine with seeing it one more time at Hell in a Cell if that's the climax. You know, that's what Hell in a Cell should be, the climax of a feud, not Act 3 of 6. I'd have Punk go over on Cena and move on to something else before his match with The Rock. Or maybe, as one of our listeners suggested, bring back Brock Lesnar. Team him up with Punk for a match with Cena and Triple H at Survivor Series. I think it's a bit early to bring Lesnar back, seeing as how he quit, and Triple H, you know, given that angle that they did with him all but announcing his retirement. But, you know, it's certainly one direction they could go in if they wanted to do it. That'd be a pretty big tag match. I know the match last year at Survivor Series with Rock and Cena against Truth and Miz did not draw very well at all. I would not necessarily put all of that on The Rock. I certainly think Punk and Lesnar as tag partners against Cena and Triple H is a much bigger tag team match than that was. But again, just one idea they could potentially go with. Back to the main event. It ended with Cena delivering a German suplex off the second rope to Punk. Both men's shoulders were counted to the mat. They played Cena's music and announced him as the new champion, but the referee said the match was a draw, and on a draw, the champion retains the title, which is correct. And Punk clobbered Cena with the belt after the match. He stood victorious, and that was Night of Champions. So, overall, I think an average show with a great main event. Which brings us to Raw. Monday night from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Not exactly Stamford, Connecticut, but still, Connecticut is WWE's home base of operations. And the only thing I could say about Bridgeport, I think the crowd in Bridgeport, perhaps, on this show was retaliating for all of the Linda McMahon TV ads I'm sure that they've had to sit through over the last couple of months, because this crowd, for, you know, certain parts they came alive, but for much of this show, this crowd was dead. I mean, they just could not care less about some of these segments. And considering some of the segments on the show, I can't say I blame them. But nonetheless, this was Raw from Bridgeport, episode 1008. It opened up with Paul Heyman coming out to CM Punk's theme music. He called out referee Chad Patton, who made the call in the main event at the pay-per-view. And oddly, on commentary, when Chad Patton came out, Michael Cole said that he had never been involved in any sort of controversy before. And the only thing I could think is, wasn't Chad Patton the same referee who got bro kicked in the face by Sheamus back in April, which kicked off this whole big controversial thing about, you know, the bro kick, and Laurinaitis, I think, fined Sheamus after that $500,000 on television. Short memories these people must have. And Patton came out, he defended the call that he made, and Paul Heyman actually said that they had fan cam footage from ringside that had been posted and pulled from YouTube by a mysterious person, I guess alluding to the fact that maybe John Cena had the clip pulled from YouTube, and they showed it on the big screen. I found this fascinating. just absolutely fascinating, since by showing something like that on TV, they're only encouraging more fans to video record matches with their phones at the buildings, which is something they ban at the arenas. I know people do it anyway, but they specifically tell people that that's not allowed. And they actually do have that kind of video routinely taken down on YouTube. Some accounts they even have suspended on YouTube for posting that sort of stuff. So talk about hypocrisy. John Cena came out. He challenged Paul Heyman to have Punk give him a rematch tonight. Alberto Del Rio came out to bitch about his loss to Sheamus the night before. I'm not sure why he felt this was an appropriate time to do so, but there you go. AJ came out. She ended up making a main event of Cena and Sheamus against Del Rio and Punk. That was your Raw main event. Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio beat Primo and Epico in a pretty good match. JBL was back on commentary for the second night in a row alongside Michael Cole and Jim Ross. Yes, it only took his best friend having a heart attack to get him back on my TV screen, so it was good to see JR. JBL tried to rectify his mistake from the night before when he referred to Mysterio and Sin Cara as having both been former AAA champions down in Mexico, which is not true. This time he referred to them both as being former CMLL champions, which is equally as false. But I still love how JBL at least tries to make it sound like he's actually doing his homework and is trying to make these guys sound legit. I love JBL. And by the way, JBL now is apparently, he is climbing Mount Kilimanjaro as we speak, as part of that whole Seven Summits for Kids. He's climbing different mountains. He's planting a WWE flag on the top of each one. And I think the first mountain he tried to climb, he failed. He was unable to make it to the top. I know he was very disappointed in that. So hopefully he'll have more luck with Kilimanjaro. Hopefully he doesn't, hopefully he makes it back. I mean, there are people who try climbing Kilimanjaro and some of these other mountains, and they don't even make it back. And I certainly hope that's not the end result of all this. So good luck to JBL on that. Eve pinned Beth Phoenix in 1 minute 39 seconds, according to my Divas stopwatch this week. Just pathetic. I've got something to say about Beth and the Divas. I'll save that for my SmackDown thoughts in a little bit. Yes, I actually have SmackDown thoughts. I watched the show this week. Then we had The Miz come out for what we were told was the worldwide debut of Miz TV, which was his own interview segment. And as somebody online pointed out to me on our Facebook page, Miz TV is not exactly something new. There was at least one, if not multiple, installments of Miz TV back as far back as 2007 when Miz was on SmackDown. So that's not exactly true. But I guess for the purposes of Monday Night Raw, it was the debut of Miz TV. And his first guest on Miz TV was Booker T. And here's something that just annoys the crap out of me. During these interview shows that people have, okay, and Miz TV is not the only example of this. You can point to virtually every single, whether it's The Cutting Edge or The Peep Show or Carlito's Cabana back in the day or the highlight reel or whatever. You know, they have stools set up in the ring for the two people to sit down in them. Miz TV, they had couches. They had long couches sitting in the background. All these seats, but yet nobody's sitting in them. You know, Miz calls out Booker T, and they stand, and they talk to each other. And why even bother having stools or couches or seats in the ring if you're not going to sit in them? I mean, you know, for something like Miz TV, you've got the couches in the background, right? Why don't you just bring people from the back? Hire some extras or something. Some staff people from the back. Use some wrestlers who aren't being used in matches that night. Just sit them on the couch and have them talk amongst themselves in the background. Background chatter while the interview takes place. Anything. Just put somebody's ass in the seat, please, for a change. But there was nobody sitting down. It was Miz and Booker. They were talking to each other. The crowd crapped all over this segment. They chanted boring. This was not very good at all. Quite frankly, instead of Miz TV, I would rather see King Kong Bundy get his own talk segment where he does some comedy, being that he is a stand-up comedian these days, and then from the comedy, he interviews one guest every week, and his gimmick is that he asks his guests 5 questions, because of course 5 is King Kong Bundy's gimmick. And by the way, if you're not following King Kong Bundy on Twitter, you're really missing out, because the dude is funny. You can follow him at RealKKBundy. I would much rather see that. I've actually advocated that idea before. So if anybody's listening, get started on that. And what ended up happening is we had Ryback come out to confront The Miz. Although Miz bailed, Ryback threw some furniture around. He was Ryback was on a tear. He took the microphone at one point and threw it, and I think it hit the ground, and apparently the microphone bounced off the ground into one of the first few rows. And a fan grabbed the microphone, and you started hearing chants of Goldberg. That was because the fan grabbed the mic and started chanting Goldberg into the microphone before they yanked the mic out of his hand. So, yeah, Ryback came out. He was going nuts. And, of course, Ryback coming out to confront The Miz certainly sounds like something I talked about recently on the Sound Off, and I'm happy they had the same idea, because, as I said on the Sound Off a couple weeks ago when I suggested Miz's next feud be with Ryback, you know, more so to benefit Ryback than Miz, I'm very happy to see them seemingly going in that direction. I mean, they're doing it because it makes sense. You know, Miz is the Intercontinental Champion. Ryback has run through all the jobbers he can possibly run through. The no-name guys, the lower-level guys like Hawkins and Rex and whoever else. And as I said on the Sound Off a few weeks ago, you know, you reach a certain point with Ryback where you either shit or get off the pot, as the old expression goes. Either do something with him now and move him to the next level, or if you don't think he's that good, or if he's dangerous in the ring, and you're ready to just cut bait and bail on the guy, which I think would be stupid considering all the time they've invested in him, then do it. But you've reached a point now where you've got to do something else with the guy. He's got something. You know, the fans are starting to get into him. They're chanting, "Feed me more." He looks a certain way that, you know, it makes him stand out, which is good. Do something with him, or, you know, get rid of him. And I get the impression here that they've come to the same realization, and they're ready to move him on to the next level. And like I said, I'm not saying book Ryback exactly like Goldberg was booked in WCW back in the day, but you could certainly borrow from the Goldberg blueprint. One way is to take a page out of what they did with Goldberg and Raven, you know, which wasn't something that was built up a lot. It was just a situation where Goldberg happened to be given a title shot one week on Nitro, and it was a big-time match. It had a big-time feel, and he beat Raven to become the United States Champion. Some people, you know, after I talked about that last time, people emailed me and said, "Oh, I think that's a great idea, although I disagree." You know, I always disagree that they took the U.S. title off Raven. They could have just had Goldberg and Raven in a non-title match. And to me, I think that's absolutely wrong. I disagree with that 100% because people were not just excited to see Goldberg beat the crap out of Raven and the Flock. They wanted Goldberg badly to win the championship. That was his first taste of gold in WCW. And it was just a really cool moment. And I don't think it would have been quite the same if you would have had Goldberg beat Raven without that belt being on the line. So, you know, now here we are in 2012. And neither man, by the way, involved here is as talented as Raven or even Goldberg were. I would say Goldberg had a leg up on Ryback. He was, again, more agile. He was a little more charismatic, a little quicker in the ring. I think just a better athlete, quite frankly, than Ryback is. And Raven, back then, when he was on his A-game, whether it was, you know, in ECW or I think even early in his WCW run, Raven was great. He was great in that role. He was a very good wrestler. I would put, you know, Raven at that time above where Miz is now. But here we are in 2012. There's a lot of similarities here, and I think you can go in the same direction. You can build this up over several weeks. You can have Miz come out. He can mock Ryback. He can make fun of Ryback. He can come out one week with a bald cap, you know, dressed up as Ryback, doing some comedy spinoff off the Feed Me More thing, and just really get under Ryback's skin and just get him angrier and angrier and angrier, to the point where people want to see Miz get absolutely dissected by this man. And it sounds like they may be doing this at Hell in a Cell based on what I've read. It looks like they're penciling in the first Ryback-Miz match for Hell in a Cell, which I think is a huge mistake. I understand that Hell in a Cell is still a month away, which is a long time. You've got 4 weeks. After a while, you run out of ideas. You know, you can have Miz come out and make fun of him 1 week and maybe even 2 weeks. What do you do after that? I get that. But to me, the first match, you should save it. You should save it, wait until Survivor Series, build it up for Survivor Series, and do the match there. I just think doing it at Hell in a Cell, it seems awfully quick to me when this was the first week we got any sort of hint at a Ryback-Miz feud. But I am happy that they were thinking along the same lines and going in that direction, because it just makes sense. Wade Barrett made his first appearance on Raw since he fucked up his elbow back in February. He looked noticeably smaller. He beat Justin Gabriel, his former Nexus stablemate. The crowd busted out loud "We want Nexus" chants during this match, which made me laugh. I guess Nexus is now considered the good old days. Way back when in 2010. Although, to be fair, the very beginning of the Nexus storyline actually was pretty damn cool. But it only took them 2 months to fuck it all up, unfortunately. Daniel Bryan came out. Even the shittiest crowds go crazy for Daniel Bryan. It's just fantastic. He and Kane beat Truth and Kofi in a rematch from the pay-per-view. They were still arguing. Kane and Bryan, you know, they look like they're having so much fun with this angle. It's great. Randy Orton pinned Tenzai. Damian Sandow beat Zack Ryder. Then we had the main event. John Cena pinned CM Punk after an AA, even though Punk's foot was clearly on the bottom rope. They had a new, younger-looking referee in there, who apparently is this guy Brad Maddox from NXT. He is a wrestler, not a referee. I did tweet when I first saw him out there that he reminded me an awful lot of Garrett Bischoff. And not just in terms of the way he looked physically, but, you know, introducing him as a referee. And then they did this finish, so obviously he's going to be part of some storyline going forward. It would certainly be different. It would be a different way of introducing somebody new as a referee who then becomes a wrestler. Wouldn't shock me to see Punk challenge this kid to a match on Raw either this week or next, so just might be something to watch out for. So Cena earns himself a rematch with Punk at Hell in a Cell if he can recover in time, which I'm sure he will. And that was Raw from Monday night. So, as I mentioned, I actually caught SmackDown as well this week. Doesn't happen very often. It just doesn't. And based on the results I've read from SmackDown in recent weeks, SmackDown has not exactly been must-see TV. But I did catch it this week because I heard it was the Kane and Daniel Bryan show. And I can actually vouch for the fact that, it was the Kane and Daniel Bryan show. These guys were all over this show. They were in no less than 6 different segments on this 2-hour show. And if you are not a fan of the tag team champions or this whole anger management storyline, you probably hated this show. But I do find it entertaining, at least most of the time. Not every segment is a winner, but they play off each other really well. I just find it hysterical every time Bryan gets Kane angry and Kane starts talking about ripping Bryan's beard off strand by strand or eviscerating him or telling him that he belonged at a petting zoo because he looked like a goat face. That one actually cracked me up. I know it shouldn't have, but it did. These guys opened the show. They had another 2 or 3 backstage segments during the show. They were each in singles matches. And then they tagged up in the main event and laid waste to all of the other tag teams with steel chairs. And one of our listeners, Eli, asked me if the use of chairs of late, especially on SmackDown, what we saw on Friday night, means that WWE is shifting away from PG. And no, that is not what it means. There is a very big difference between hitting somebody in the gut, let's say, or across the back with a steel chair, as opposed to hitting them in the head. Plus, you know, back when people were hitting other people in the head with chairs, I mean, it happened all the time. And some of those guys looked like they were swinging for the fences. I mean, they killed each other back then with chair shots to the head. And this is far more tame than what we had back then. But still, I don't think we've seen one person take more chair shots the way that Damian Sandow did on this show since Bret Hart killed Vince McMahon with about 13 chair shots at WrestleMania, I think it was WrestleMania 26. So, poor Damian Sandow. Although he did get a pinfall win over Kane on this show, I know not everyone views Kane as a top guy anymore, but even still, you know, even though there was, you know, Bryan distracted Kane during the match, still, Damian Sandow got a pinfall win over Kane. To me, that is a big deal. So, I do find it a bit depressing that all of the chair shots to Damian Sandow at the end of the show were done for comedy. You know, it was almost a case where Kane and Bryan were bonding over these chair shots they gave to everybody. And like I said, Damian Sandow took just an endless stream of chair shots to the back. I mean, they laid him out at the end of SmackDown. And you give somebody 15 or 20 chair shots or whatever it was, and as far as I'm concerned, that guy should be out of action for a couple of weeks. But I'm sure we'll see Sandow back on TV this week, like nothing ever happens. So unfortunately, chair shots don't mean what they used to. Edge also made an appearance on SmackDown. They were promoting his being on that sci-fi TV show, Haven. He looked good. Seems to finally be at peace with his retirement. He talked about finally being able to watch WWE on TV as a fan, which I know he wasn't able to do for quite a while. It was just too hard for him to do. So he was in there with Brian and Kane. He reminded Kane of their infamous feud from 2010 that saw Edge kidnap Paul Bearer and torture him. He bounced dodgeballs off the man's face. I think he said he threw pizza at him. My God, has Kane had some god-awful feuds or what? I think I've talked about this before, but it's just still amazes me when I think about it. Maybe that's why I've really warmed up to the Brian and Kane stuff. You know, compared to some of his other storylines, this thing may as well be the freaking Mega Power split from 89. And you know what else I like about it? It's helped put the tag team titles back in the spotlight. They still don't mean all that much, but they mean more in just the last couple of weeks than they did the entire time that Truth and Kofi had them. When was the last time the tag team champions were featured in a TV main event? Not only that, but they really are trying to place a renewed focus on the tag team division. I don't know if that's a result of Triple H, his influence, or what. But you've got Kane and Bryan, you've got Kofi and Truth, you've got the primetime players, you've got the Usos, Tyson Kidd and Justin Gabriel are a team now. A lot of makeshift teams, which I hate. But still, they're trying. Whereas, they have seemingly given up on the Divas division. I mean, could women's wrestling in WWE possibly be any more dead? You know, first Karma gets the boot. Now the news that Beth Phoenix has given notice to the company, and she'll be finishing up with them next month. The rumor is that she's retiring, but let's be real. Nobody really retires in pro wrestling. Unless they're so physically broken down they can't even get medically cleared like Edge, nobody really retires. The real question is, do you care? Not about Beth. I'm not talking about Beth. I'm talking about women's wrestling in WWE. Do you care if the Divas division lives or dies? Some people hate women's wrestling no matter what. They think it's boring. Maybe they don't like the idea of two women beating each other up. But a lot of people tend to think it's just boring, and the TV ratings will bear that out because people usually tune out during the Divas matches, I think largely because it's been treated as an afterthought for so long. You know, they go out there on Raw most weeks, and their entrances are longer than the actual matches. That's a problem. I mean, you know what I'd love to see? The lead singer of Green Day lost his shit at a music festival on Friday this week. Apparently, Usher went long in his performance, so they cut Green Day's time. Not unlike what you might see on Raw, where sometimes the top guys go long in the opening segment, let's say, and the women end up having their time cut later on as a result. So the guy goes out there on stage, he sees that he has 1 minute to perform, and he goes on this profanity-laced tirade about how they're only giving him 1 minute, and then he smashes his guitar, he gives everybody the finger, and he walks off. I'd love to see Beth, before she leaves, pull something like that on Raw. Would serve them right. I've said before, the stuff with Trish Stratus and Mickie James in 2006 was some of the most interesting storytelling on Raw during that entire period. Not just with the women, I'm talking in general. You know, when it's done the right way, I think women's wrestling can be very entertaining. The key is that, A, you need women that can actually work. There are a lot of talented lady wrestlers out there who don't get a chance because they don't look a certain way, and that's not right. And B, WWE has to make the commitment to them, to give them more time on TV, to give 5 minutes of actual thought to what they're going to do with them. Pick two women, any two women, and come up with an intriguing story to tell. That's all it takes. That's all you have to do. According to the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter, WWE and All Japan Pro Wrestling have apparently reached some sort of business arrangement with one another. I haven't seen this confirmed anywhere else, but that's the story going around. And I'm not sure what that business arrangement is, but apparently John Laurinaitis, with his ties to Japan, helped facilitate whatever deal went down. Kenzo Suzuki actually wrestles for All Japan. Remember him? He had a stint for a cup of coffee in WWE many years ago. At one point, he was actually penciled in as Chris Benoit's opponent for a... they were going to work together over the summer for the world title. And you know what they say about the best laid plans. But I bring this up because, you know what? Forget All Japan. WWE will never do anything meaningful with any Japanese talent. It's just not going to happen. Instead, why not form some sort of partnership with Dave Prezak's Shimmer promotion? A lot of good female performers have either gotten their start there or passed through Shimmer. Beth Phoenix was one. Natalia. Karma. A lot of the women currently signed to WWE developmental deals. You know, Sarah Del Rey. That other girl, what's her name now? They're calling her Emma. Brittany Knight. I mean, why not use it as something of a feeder system for good women's wrestlers? Not women who look pretty, but don't know a thing about wrestling. Why is someone like Sarah Del Rey not on TV already? Could she not help the Divas division right now? Is the Divas division so stacked with talent, brimming with overflowing with talent, that there's no room for somebody like her on TV? This thing is on life support right now. Sin Cara was able to bypass developmental and go right to the main roster, so it's not like some people haven't done that before. That division is in dire need of some new talent. But is it even worth saving at this point? I think it's a good question. All I know is that, you know, when I was younger, I used to watch the Jumping Bomb Angels on WWF television. You know, they would wrestle matches at these house shows in Madison Square Garden. And they, at the time, a lot of the MSG house shows aired on TV. I never saw them in person at the Garden. But these women were amazing. I never cared much at all back then about watching the women do anything but stand at ringside and look pretty. But those women blew me away with the things they were doing in the ring. I think women's wrestling is worth saving. But you need to give people a reason to give a shit. That's what it boils down to. Back to SmackDown. A couple of other notes here. Antonio Cesaro lost to Santino Marella in a non-title match after Oksana hurt her knee trying to reach into the ring to grab the Cobra. And after the match, Cesaro broke up with Oksana in 5 different languages. How do you say too soon in Swedish or Russian? Seems awfully quick to be breaking them up already. I don't know about that one. And why is Cesaro still wrestling Santino, for Christ's sake? Enough already. The guy is better than that. You know what? Here's an idea. Here's another idea. Get Cassius Ohno off of NXT and onto SmackDown so he can feud with his former tag partner for the U.S. title. Ohno is better as a heel, you know, like when he was Chris Hero in Ring of Honor. I loved his work. But you know what? To get the guy started, to get some goddamn great matches on TV that'll make him look good, promote him, and start something with him and Cesaro. I'd rather see them team, but I know that's not going to happen. Just anybody but Santino. Enough already. I like Santino, but enough with him and Cesaro. You know, the comedy stuff is just, it's a killer. Cesaro should not be involved in that stuff. Enough with the Cobra, enough with Santino. Let's get somebody else up. Let's get him in a U.S. title feud. Let's get that going, and enough of this. One last thing. Am I wrong, or was that not the TNA voiceover guy that I heard during the video package recapping the Sheamus Del Rio bro kick stuff early in the show? It sounded exactly like him. And not only that, but the way they scripted the guy to speak in that voiceover reminded me a lot of how Impact opens every single week. You know, when they explain to us what happened the previous week, and then they ask the question, what will happen this week? It sounds like something WWE may have copied from TNA for a change instead of the other way around. But the guy, I think it might even be the same guy. And if you want to go back and listen to it, let me know. But that was something that also jumped out at me. Speaking of Impact, that's the perfect segue to TNA, Impact Wrestling this past Thursday night. A couple of quick notes on that show as well. It was a decent show. It wasn't like a blowaway show or anything like that. We had a cameo from Shaquille O'Neal in the opening segment. It was a backstage thing. He bumped into Hulk Hogan, and they talked about the Aces and Eights, and Shaq said he was leaving, but he would come back. He had Hogan's back. We never did see Shaq again on the show. Shaq never did come out before the live audience. I have absolutely no idea what the purpose of this was. I guess it's cool they can say they had a star like Shaq on their show, but because I guess Shaq is tight with Hogan, why wouldn't you have him come out before the crowd? Why would you tease that he was going to be back to do something and then not even reference him on the show again? I thought that was kind of odd. We had a match with AJ Styles and Kurt Angle against Chavo Guerrero and Hernandez. This was a great match. This was a great, great match. I really enjoyed this match. And in the end, Kaz and Daniels interfered. Hulk Hogan came out. He announced that at Bound for Glory, it would be a three-way match for the tag team titles. It would be Kaz and Chris Daniels defending against Styles and Angle and Chavo and Hernandez, which should be an awesome match. There was a segment on the show, backstage segment, with Dixie Carter and Bruce Pritchard. The audio was way out of sync. It was like a really bad YouTube video. It looked like, not only did it look like a really bad YouTube video, it looked like one of those old Jackie Chan movies they sometimes show on like Spike TV, where the sound is dubbed over in English badly. That's what this reminded me of. Let's see what else we had. We had Doug Williams beating the gut check kid this week. Evan Markopoulos was his name, 18 years old. And not for nothing, but this kid did pretty good for himself, I think. The crowd was really behind him. He took a hell of a beating from Doug Williams. He took it like a champ. He didn't look clumsy in there like that last guy did. I already forgot the guy's name already, the bald guy whose brother, I think, had been murdered or something. He had a really sad story, but he sucked. And thankfully, they had enough sense to say no. They voted no on the last gut check guy. But to be perfectly honest with you, I think this kid would be a prime candidate for training in OVW, who, of course, has a partnership with TNA. If he cuts a good promo next week when the judges make their decision, they usually give the guy the microphone. He gets to cut a promo and say a few words. I think if he does a good job and makes a good showing for himself next week, I would give him a contract. I think he deserves it. I would give him a contract. It was also open fight night on this show, which I hate. I don't like the concept. Storm called out Rude, that being James Storm, I should say, and Bobby Rude. They fought to a no contest, and they had a long brawl all over the Impact Zone. I mean, they wrestled up the aisle, they wrestled on the stage, off the stage, at ringside. People were putting their feet up on the barricade so that James Storm can throw Bobby Rude's head into it. They were very interactive with the fans in this match. And if this were the Bound for Glory main event, which at one point had been rumored to be the idea that Bobby Roode, as the defending champion, would defend against James Storm, who would win the Bound for Glory series. Of course, that didn't exactly happen that way. But if this were the Bound for Glory main event, I would say it was really dumb to give this away on Impact. I don't think they would have done it. And I'm sure this is building to another match at the pay-per-view between the two of them, but you know what? Who cares? I thought this was a fine brawl. I enjoyed this. I can't complain that they gave it away. And you know what? For TNA purposes, maybe it didn't make any sense for them to give this away if they're going to build this up as a big match for Bound for Glory, but I enjoyed it. And that's all that matters. It was entertaining. All except for the blonde chick at ringside who kept screaming and cursing at Bobby Roode. Like I said on Twitter, I wonder if she kisses her mother with that mouth. White trash. But I enjoyed this segment. We had Hulk Hogan got a phone call from the Aces and Eights leader. These guys are they've been playing phone tag with one another. They've become phone buddies, apparently. And Aces and Eights said they kidnapped poor Joseph Park. Or, as Hulk Hogan would go on to call him about three different times on the show, Joe Parks, with an S. The guy has been hanging around for how many months now, and Hulk Hogan can't get his fucking name right? I mean, JBL kept botching Dolph Ziggler's name at Night of Champions, but at least JBL has a valid excuse. He hasn't been paying very close attention to the product. He hasn't called a match in years. What's Hogan's excuse? He's the general manager. You would think he would know the guy's name. Anyway, we had footage of Joe Park locked in a cage inside the Aces and Eights clubhouse. That's what they called it, the Aces and Eights clubhouse. So I guess they're a minor league baseball team now, I guess. Well, it's pretty badass uniforms if they wanted to be. They smashed Joe Park's laptop computer, which apparently had evidence on there as to their identity, so they had to destroy it. But Park said that he had all the information up here, pointing at his head, which proved to be a bad idea on his part. They took a hammer and they bashed him in the skull with it. Yes, they did this on camera. And all Hulk Hogan could do back in the ring was just stand there and watch with a rather nonchalant look on his face. And that was that. And Hogan, by the way, Hogan agreed to visit the Aces and AIDS clubhouse himself next week. I don't think they explained where said clubhouse is located, but it must be in the gigantic impact zone somewhere. I mean, the place is so huge, it's so easy to get lost in there. This was stupid. This whole thing was just dumb. And if this means we're not going to get Joe Park on TV for a while, then that makes us even dumber. Although I suppose it's still possible he's in on this in some way, which could make for a fine twist. I would suspect we'll find out one way or the other at Bound for Glory, but this segment was dumb. After watching Austin Aries on the show, I have come to the conclusion that he is turning heel very soon. Maybe at Bound for Glory. If he loses the title to Jeff Hardy, maybe he'll snap and he'll attack Jeff. Just the things he was saying on this show. And look, the Austin Aries character, even as a babyface, what helped get him over is the fact that he's so full of himself. He thinks, I mean, on his fucking cape, for Christ's sake, it says the greatest man who ever lived. So obviously, Austin Aries, as a heel or a face, has a very high impression, a very high opinion of himself. But the things he was saying on this show to Jeff Hardy and in his promo in the ring before the main event, it just screamed heel turn. It doesn't make sense for him to go out there and say these things and expect that he's going to be a babyface that people will cheer for. At some point, he's going to keep saying this stuff, and it's going to turn people against him. And I suspect that's the direction they're going in. And if they're not, I don't know why he goes out there and says the stuff that he does. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So he wrestled Bully Ray in the main event. He lost after Bully Ray nailed him with his chain and pinned him. So my question is, does that mean that Bully Ray now is going to lobby to be added to the title match of Bound for Glory? Is he going to be added? Is it going to be a three-way now at the pay-per-view? Because if it isn't, I don't really see anywhere else that Bully Ray fits on the show as of right now, unless they do the big Aces and AIDS reveal and he's part of it, with or without Joe Park. I think adding him to the main event after he lost cleanly in the finals of the Bound for Glory series would cheapen the entire tournament. I think that would be a terrible idea. So the main event needs to stay a singles match, and you know, they put their bets on Hardy and Aries, and that should be the main event. So that was Impact on Thursday night. TNA did make an announcement this week as well. They put a press release out with Spike TV announcing that they will continue to run live episodes of Impact through the end of 2012. So that's great news right there. I've said before, Impact should stay live. Spike has not yet made the commitment to keep the show live permanently, but as it appears, not only will it go live for the rest of the year, there's some talk it will extend into 2013 as well. I think unless Impact just completely falls off a cliff as far as the ratings are concerned, if they can maintain or even improve a little bit on where they've been, I think long-term you're looking at Impact staying live on a permanent basis, which I think it should. I think the show should be live every Thursday night. I think it does add a certain element of unpredictability to it. So that was some positive news. So that's all the key stuff out of the way. Let's break into the shout-outs here and the mailbag. I got a lot, let's put it that way, from you guys this week, which is great. I want more. You can email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. If you have questions, shout-outs, that's the place to do it. Not on Facebook or Twitter or anywhere else. Email me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. First, I want to wish a happy birthday to Hemi Hemstock. Kind of a funny name. Also to Jordan, whose birthday is today, the 23rd. He's been listening to the Sound Off since episode 1. He also asks, do I believe that Jeff Hardy will return to WWE in early 2013 after his TNA contract expires? That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Whether Jeff Hardy will re-sign with TNA or not. I know that's been in the news of late. Rumor has it that Jeff Hardy has been treated so well of late for that very reason. They want to, make him happy. Which, to me, if that's the reason that TNA is doing this, is putting Jeff Hardy in the main event of Bound for Glory when that was not the original plan, well, my guess would be to make him happy would mean that he's winning the championship. I mean, it wouldn't make sense if they put him in the main event to make him happy and then they have him lose. So I wonder if that means that they're going to put the title on him and put him over Austin Aries on October 14th. It could very well happen. I mean, look, the quickest way to make the guy happy, one would think, unless Jeff doesn't care about this sort of thing, is not only to put him in main events, but put the belt on him. Because if you put the championship on him, it makes it... I mean, it certainly doesn't make it impossible. Jeff can make whatever decision he wants to make. You know, he could say thanks but no thanks, you know, in February and say I'm out of here, and they could take the title off him. But TNA doesn't exactly have a great track record of taking titles off people that they know are leaving the company. I see where they're going to be determining a new television champion next week. They never did make the announcement that, you know, D-Von was stripped of the title because, you know, they let his contract lapse, but without taking the title off him, which was a boneheaded move on their part. I would like to think they would not do the same thing with their world title, but then again, never say never. But is Jeff Hardy going to go back to WWE? I don't know. I don't know the actual answer to that. My gut tells me he's staying in TNA. I have nothing specific that you guys haven't read or heard to base that off of. I think TNA... Here's the thing with Jeff Hardy. And I've ranted about Jeff Hardy before, and I've also said that it's really cool to see that he seemingly put his problems behind him. I haven't heard there being any Jeff Hardy issues or anything of late, and that's really cool. I hope that he has, seemingly like his brother, been able to put whatever demons or issues he had behind him. Because he's a talented guy, he's the most, you know, popular star in the entire company, sells a shit ton of merchandise and all that, and it would be a shame for TNA to lose him. It would be a huge loss for TNA if he left. I know WWE would probably love to take him back in a heartbeat. He is a guy that has two strikes. Him being, you know, with the wellness policy, him being gone does not erase that. When he goes back at some point, as I suspect Jeff Hardy will, to WWE, whether it's next year or the year after that or the year after that, he still will have two strikes on his record, much like Randy Orton has now, which means one strike and he's terminated for a year. So he's got that black cloud hanging over his head. There's also the issue of this lawsuit that's ongoing where WWE is not signing any TNA talent. That's why we haven't seen Ric Flair back on TV. That's why Matt Morgan apparently got tired of waiting, and Matt Morgan has re-signed now with TNA. Would they even be able to sign Jeff Hardy? If this lawsuit is still ongoing and they made the comment, you know, to the court that, we are not interested in signing any TNA talent, thus putting their foot in their mouth. I don't even know that WWE would be willing to sign Jeff Hardy right now. The timing, as much as they'd love to have him back, I'm sure the timing may be all wrong. So, you know, considering the lawsuit and also considering how TNA has treated Jeff Hardy, you know, they gave him a chance at redemption in some ways because they could have easily just slammed the door in this guy's face and said, F you. After what happened at Victory Road last year with the whole debacle, or maybe it was earlier this year, I don't remember, but the whole thing with Sting and Jeff Hardy was an embarrassment. It was one of the biggest embarrassments in the history of that company, and it made me so angry when that happened that they let him go out there like that, and they fucked over the fans who paid for that pay-per-view. It was just an absolute embarrassment. That, for that alone, they were well within their rights to say, you know what, Hardy, piss off. We don't want you here anymore. But they gave him another shot, and he got his house in order, and he seems to be doing very well these days. He's come from, you know, the lowest of lows back up to where he once was. And I think TNA has treated him well in that respect. And I think, to some degree, you know, it would be... maybe disrespectful is not the right word, but it would be a slight against TNA. It would be a slight against an organization that gave him a second chance. If in fact he turned around and said, you know what, I know you're pushing me, or I know you're going to make me your world champion, but I'm leaving because I want to go make more money in WWE, which he's entitled to do. He's going to make a hell of a lot more money in WWE than he probably would in TNA. But something just tells me that Hardy is not going anywhere. I think when his contract comes up, if it goes that far, if he doesn't re-sign before that, I feel like he'll stay in TNA, but I have no inside knowledge of this, so... I guess we'll see what happens. This comes from Bruce. Says, I was wondering if I could get a shout-out for my birthday on September 23rd. Also had a question. The first WrestleMania was in 1985, which was 27 years ago. So how then are they on the 28th one, 27 years in? So happy birthday, Bruce. The reason is because there was no WrestleMania Zero. That would be why. Pete from Florida writes in, longtime listener, first-time writer, my birthday is Friday the 21st. I'd love to get a shout-out. Happy birthday, Pete. I've been an active listener since episode 154. My question is, do you think that it's kind of odd your predictions from the Sound Off are starting to show up on WWE television? By my count, you're 4-for-4. You called the Miz cat and mouse game with Ryback, the Ryback Subway commercial. Well, I think it was Burger King that I suggested, but the idea was the same, yes. Changing the WWE announce table roster to spice things up a bit. Again, I didn't foresee Jerry Lawler having a heart attack, so I don't know about that one. That's a bit of a stretch. Pete says, there's one more, but I forgot. Maybe this was just one small step to you becoming the social media ambassador for Raw. Well, hey, my campaign is still going. I'm here. I am available if they ever want me to be the social media ambassador for one night to Raw. So I don't think that will be happening, though. Something just tells me I don't think that's going to happen. So anyway, that's from Pete, so happy birthday to him. Andrew from Michigan writes in. He's been a listener since episode 18. Says, since it's been a long time I've sent you anything, I just wanted to get a shout-out as I am celebrating my 34th birthday, September 20th. Also, in remembering your adventures from last year, just a suggestion for your next vacation, you should come to Marquette, Michigan for the annual Beer Festival. Next year will be the 5th annual UP Beer Festival, and it's the best $35 you'll ever spend. It takes place the second Saturday in September. They have over 40 different brewers at this event and close to 100 different beers to try. And all listeners across the country should come to this event. Since WWE needs a big name for the Hall of Fame next year, this is his question now, not for the Beer Fest, why not put in Regis Philbin? He's been a big fan of wrestling and would have WWE guys on his show all the time. So that comes from Andrew. I would agree. Regis would be a very deserving inductee into the celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame, but he's not that one big name they need. You know, Regis Philbin is not going to headline a Hall of Fame class. Somebody like The Warrior or Rock would fit that bill. My Hall of Fame class, by the way, for next year, if I had to pick, and I don't think this Hall of Fame class is actually all that unrealistic. At Madison Square Garden, my Hall of Fame class for next year would be Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage, Mick Foley, Bob Backlund, King Kong Bundy, and Demolition. I know sometimes they like to mix in some non-WWE guys from like the NWA or AWA or whatever, or put an announcer in there, and I'm sure they will, or they'll find a celebrity as well, by the way. I mean, if they wanted to put a celebrity in New York next year, Regis Philbin would certainly be a good option. Donald Trump would be another fine option, because say what you want to about Trump. Trump has been involved with WWE before. Obviously, most notably, most recently, he was the owner of Raw for a period of time. And the whole thing with the Battle of the Billionaires at WrestleMania 23, which is still the highest grossing match in WWE history. He hosted two WrestleManias back in the late 80s. So Trump would be a fine celebrity inductee into the Hall of Fame as well. But I think, as far as wrestling names, that would be my Hall of Fame class for next year. Jacob from Kansas, can I get a birthday shout out for my big day on the 27th? I will be turning 19 and have listened to all available Sound Offs and even call into SE Scoops Live whenever I can. Thanks for the podcast every week. It really is very entertaining. So happy birthday to Jacob. I appreciate your support. J.R. Sanders writes in, what do you think of the hateful comments that New Jack made about Jerry Lawler after his heart attack? What goes around comes around. That's all I really have to say about that. Luis from Los Angeles, I have a question about the Tuesday SmackDown experiment. Didn't the Tuesday SmackDown experiment start way back at the end of 2010? I mean, SmackDown did air at least once on a Tuesday in December before Christmas. Can you go a little bit more in-depth about this? That is correct. I had to look up the specific date, but there was a live SmackDown that aired on Tuesday before Christmas in 2010, December 21st to be exact, with a main event of John Cena beating Dolph Ziggler and Vicky Guerrero. That was the main event on that show. And it was just an experiment by Sci-Fi to see how SmackDown would do on a different night. It did well enough for them to try other experiments the following year. But I recall there being weeks where the taped replay version of the show on Friday would actually outperform the live airing. And obviously, if the show did so much better on Tuesdays than it does on Fridays, they would have made a permanent move by now. I think the fact that they haven't pretty much tells you everything you need to know. This one comes from Jeremy Staples of the website Kayfabe Corner. I was wondering if I can get a shout-out for my wife, Bethany, in honor of our one-year wedding anniversary. We were married on September 21st of last year. And over the past year, my wife has encouraged me when I decided to take up reviewing wrestling shows, as well as interviewing wrestlers and figures from the online wrestling community, yourself included, that being me. Jeremy did interview me. While she is only a casual fan, she is fond of my passion for wrestling and goes out of her way to support me in any way that she can. She is a keeper for sure. So congratulations to Jeremy and Bethany. That's actually very cool. Not every wife, I would think, would be as understanding as she seems to be. So she is indeed a keeper. Armand from Bridgeport, Connecticut, the site of Raw this past Monday, he writes in, "Do you prefer the pre-Dirt Sheet days when we just watched and enjoyed the show? We didn't concern ourselves with work rate and the intricacies of matches. We just enjoyed the show. Has the internet community jaded our love of the game?" The short answer is, yeah, it has. Without a doubt. That's the most honest answer I could really give on that question. I mean, it's also part of growing up, though, right? I mean, you become naturally more inquisitive about the behind-the-scenes aspects of the business. You become more curious about what happens off-camera. Maybe you want to get into the wrestling business yourself, or you're just a business major in college. Whatever the case may be, at some point, if you've been a fan for any significant length of time, you're going to want to know more about that stuff anyway. It's just natural. The internet just makes it a hell of a lot easier to do that. In many cases, you've got fans who only stick with wrestling because they find the backstage stuff more interesting than what they see on screen these days. So it goes both ways. I have people who write into me saying that they've long given up on watching WWE, but they enjoy listening to the shows, the sound-offs, not just to keep up with what's going on, but to hear the backstage gossip and, you know, who left or who just got signed and that sort of stuff. So again, it goes both ways. Richie from the Netherlands writes in, longtime listener submitting his very first question to the sound-off. "Why is it on the Raw or SmackDown after a pay-per-view, they always show still images of the matches and not the actual video footage? This may be a dumb question, but it's something I've never understood." It's not a dumb question at all. WWE and even WCW back in the day have been doing this, I mean, going back to the early 90s. You know, back then, they would really promote the hell out of the pay-per-view replays that would air in the days after the event. So it was their way of showing something big that happened at the show without actually giving away the video footage, because if they did that, why would you order the pay-per-view replay? You know, the replays are not pushed nearly as much as they used to be. Now I think it's more a case of them wanting people to buy the DVD when it comes out, so they show still shots instead of showing the actual video, because again, if you show the actual video, you know, something big that happened last Sunday, then I have no need to go out and spend $20 or $30 on a DVD. Nathan asks, "When did the Attitude Era officially end? When did the PG Era start? And what would have been the time in between called?" As far as I'm concerned, and this is just my answer, the Attitude Era officially ended when Steve Austin shook Vince McMahon's hand at WrestleMania 17. WWE, they officially went PG, I believe it was in 2008. And they've said this themselves. It was 2008 when they decided to take the company in a more PG direction. So that's when that era would have started. Which, again, is not to say that in 08 or even 09 they didn't do certain things that you might look at now and go, well, wait a minute, that's not very PG. You know, when Randy Orton beat up Stephanie McMahon in 2009, that wasn't PG, which is true. But officially, it started in 08, and it was a process over the last couple of years where the company has just become more and more sanitized to that sort of stuff. And the era in between was the Ruthless Aggression era. I guess you could say that period after WrestleMania 17 was the Invasion era. But by the following year, it transitioned to the Ruthless Aggression era. Vince McMahon had come out that one time on SmackDown. All the wrestlers were out there, and he talked about these young guys, you know, taking the brass ring and taking the initiative, Ruthless Aggression. John Cena's very first promo, in fact, when he made his debut on SmackDown, he came out talking about Ruthless Aggression, and then he beat up Kurt Angle. So that's what that era would be called. And lastly, Michael Avila writes in, he says, "Do you feel TNA is keeping their world title on Austin Aries to reel in the Ring of Honor fans? I see it as WWE and TNA are playing a tug-of-war of sorts by having two former ROH champions hold their most important titles. I know there's been talk recently of putting the TNA title back on Jeff Hardy to keep him with the company, but I think it's interesting that Aries has kept the title as long as he has and feel that TNA put their title on Aries to compete with CM Punk's current reign as, if to say, we have to put our world title on a Ring of Honor guy to get those fans to watch our show." That's quite a stretch. I don't believe that for a second, that WWE, and perhaps even TNA, care about ROH so much that it would influence who they book as their world champions. In fact, I know that's not the case. That's complete BS. Especially WWE. I mean, it's laughable. The Ring of Honor fan base isn't quite as robust as it once was. It was never even as robust as the old ECW audience. Ring of Honor has never even come close to matching ECW's largest crowd for an event, which I think was over 6,000 people for a house show. The point is, WWE and TNA are well aware of Ring of Honor in terms of talent. You know, they've signed a lot of guys that have passed through Ring of Honor, have made a name for themselves in Ring of Honor, are now in WWE or even TNA. I mean, we were talking before about Antonio Cesaro, Cassius Ohno, Seth Rollins is perhaps the biggest star on NXT right now. Those guys made a name for themselves or passed through Ring of Honor first. Ring of Honor is apparently prominently featured in CM Punk's new DVD that comes out on October the 9th. There's new footage of Punk returning to the ROH Wrestling Academy where he was once a trainer. That's on the DVD. So they're aware of ROH. They've certainly taken talent from them before, but that has nothing to do with CM Punk holding the championship, and it has even less to do with Austin Aries having the title. Besides, Punk has been champion since November of last year. Aries didn't even win the title until July. So this notion that, well, we've got to put the title on him because WWE put their title on CM Punk, the timeline doesn't even make sense here. One does not have anything to do with the other. To say that it's because of ROH would be giving ROH far too much credit. That's going to do it for the questions this week and the shout-outs. I want to thank everybody who sent in stuff. Send in more stuff to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Don't forget we have a group, a Solemn Monster Sounds Off discussion group on Facebook. If you type in the name, it should come right up. We have a lot of good people chatting about what else. They chat about wrestling in this group. You can ask for membership. I have to approve you, and then you will officially be able to post. So look for that. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solemonster is my handle, facebook.com/TheSolemonster is our official Facebook profile page, and you can subscribe to the show in iTunes. Type in Solemonster Sounds Off, and the show should come right up. You can subscribe for free. Anytime a new show goes up, it will be automatically downloaded for you. I know iTunes now, there's like a new iTunes version out. I haven't upgraded mine yet, but you can get the sound off even with the latest and greatest version of iTunes, so subscribe there. So that does it for this week's show. I want to thank you guys, as always, for taking the time out of what I'm sure is a very busy day to listen to me talk about pro wrestling. I very much appreciate it. We'll be back next weekend. The final September sound-off, I guess it'll be next weekend, before we hit the month of October, my favorite month. Episode 239 next week. Until then, be well, stay safe, and we'll see you right back here next week. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemn Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.